You are listening to Hillary Topper On Air, the small business podcast to help you grow both personally and professionally. And now, here's your host, Hillary Topper.
Today, we have a truly inspiring conversation in store for you. Joining us are two remarkable individuals who are redefining the boundaries of athletic achievement and philanthropy. I'm Hillary Topper, and this is Hillary Topper On Air, the Endurance Sports Edition. Today, I have the great pleasure of speaking with Jack Thompson, a professional Australian cyclist, and Yuri Housewald, elite athlete manager at Goo Energy Labs. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
So, Jack and Yuri, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background? And we'll start with you, Jack.
Sure. So I'm an Australian. I am 34 years old. I'm living in Spain and I'm a professional ultra cyclist. And a bit of background for you. I started life, in a very normal manner. I went to school, I went to university. I played sport throughout my school and university career, but I actually suffered from depression at that same time too. And it wasn't until I was about 26 that I started cycling sort of professionally, if that's what you want to call it, but I don't actually race. So it's been a funny sort of pathway for me to get to where I am today. I've suffered from a drug addiction. I've been in and out of rehab. And it wasn't until I realized that life was actually for living and I actually wanted to follow a dream that I, gave away the 9-to-5 office job that I was in and decided to pursue this passion of cycling. And I was lucky enough to turn it into a job. So I now undertake extreme challenges on the bike. We document them in the form of films. And Yuri and the team at Goo are just one amazing brand that support me in my endeavors to do these crazy things on the bike and use it as a platform to talk about mental health and, the ability to do things that are, may seem impossible.
Well, we're going to get into all of that. Yuri, just give us a little update on your background.
Yeah, so I'm based out here in Northern California, Petaluma. Goo's offices are in Berkeley. I grew up on a farm out here and played all the stick and ball sports growing up, but discovered I was half decent at playing lacrosse in high school, and that was my ticket to college. I went to UC Berkeley, armed myself with a degree in American literature and a minor in African American literature, and went back east after graduating, and that's where I discovered the mountain bike. So I picked up the bike very late in life, and have been riding all over the world since then. I've been able to blur work and play. I turned pro at the age of 36. I really just enjoy pushing my limits and getting the opportunity to work with amazing individuals like Jack. I get to call that part of my job. I just look forward to sharing more about what we are doing with our roster of athletes out here.
Awesome. All right. So Jack, let's start with you. So you've accomplished so much in your cycling career, including holding multiple records with the Guinness Book of World Records and world firsts. Can you tell us one of the most memorable achievements that you've had and what drove you to pursue these extraordinary challenges?
Sure. So let's look back at 2022. 2022 was probably my biggest year on the bike, both from like the number of hours I spent on the bike, but also I guess what we achieved as a team. I set myself this goal in 2021 of climbing 1,000,000 meters. So that's 3.5 million feet. And it's it's difficult to put that into perspective, but it's essentially climbing up to the International Space Station and doing that 2.5 times throughout the space of a year. But the sort of, there was a reason behind undertaking that challenge, and it was to try and raise funds for free mental health charities. And so we picked three charities. One's a US-based charity, one's an African-based charity, and one's an Australian charity. And the goal was to try and raise $1 for every meter that I climbed. And while we didn't quite hit the fundraising target, we raised $500,000.
Wow.
And so, the riding was essentially to put to a good cause. And that cause was to help people in need. So for me, that's the biggest thing I've ever achieved, both physically and mentally and philanthropically. I'm sort of sitting here now talking about it, thinking, how did I go about it? It was just one long, hard slog, but it was, it was all about breaking that big goal into small chunks, small manageable chunks, and just spending, each day just ticking the list. I've done that, and I'm working towards the bigger goal. So that was a highlight for me. It was, yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, that is just so amazing. I love that story. So, you talked a little bit in the beginning about mental health, and you also mentioned it here that you raise money for these charities. Talk to us a little bit about your personal journey with mental health. I think it's really super important. I know it's super important for other athletes out there to hear this.
Sure. So, like I said, when I was around 13 years old, I realized that I wasn't happy. And I, my parents said, look, we think you need to go and chat with someone. And I went and chatted with the psychologist at the time. And he said, look, I think you're suffering from depression. And at the time, it wasn't something that was really spoken about. I didn't really know what it was, to be honest. I'd been given a bit of a label. And anyway, that was that. I started training triathlon, and I found that, having these little goals each day, whether it was swimming, riding or running, it gave me a focus and a bit of a purpose. And I found that by playing sport and keeping active, it kept my mind healthy and the depression almost disappeared. I then went to university and I gave away the triathlon because I wanted to concentrate on studies. And I found that my mood dropped right off. I was not happy. I felt like I was, going through the motions, but not really satisfied with life. And I actually developed a drug addiction during this time. So I was partying. I was, I was a young guy, but I wasn't happy. And I developed some really bad tendencies. And anyway, I went into rehab. Long story short, my parents found that I was using drugs, and we had a pretty serious discussion at home. I went into rehab, and when I came out, my dad said to me, look, I think you need to get back on a bike. And I, as a teenager, I said, I don't want to listen to what my parents are telling me to do, but I eventually gave in. And I found that love again of sport, and I found that it really helped to improve my mindset. And for me, that became a bit of it was a sign, I needed to play sport. I needed to be involved with sport, not just because of the physical benefits, more so because of the mental benefits that it gave me. And, I've since played sport, for the last 14, 15 years since having come from rehab. And it's just kept my mental health in a very good place. I do have ups and downs from day to day, week to week. And I think that's very normal. That's just, we all have our ups and downs, but the sport is the one thing that keeps me very level-headed. And so there's my, mental health background. And
I thank you for sharing that with us. I mean, I think that not only do a lot of triathletes and endurance athletes, have struggles with mental health issues, but many have been former, drug addicts. How do you think that shaped you as an individual?
I think
as an athlete today.
Yeah, I think like when I'm going through a difficult time now as an athlete, you know, like when an event's getting hard or when I'm training and I'm like, you know, I'm tired, everything becomes relative. You know, I think back to when I was going through that difficult time and I was in a very dark place and things now seem easy. I can sort of put it into perspective. Like, you know, I'm 6 or 8 hours into an event, or I'm 2 days into a multi-day event and I'm struggling, but I think, you know, this isn't really that difficult compared to what I've been through in the past. And I think it gives it a perspective to what difficult or what hard is. And I almost use that to my advantage. You know, I can put things that might, you know, if I hadn't been through the ordeal with the drugs and the depression, mm-hmm. I might not be able to see the relativity to the difficultness that I'm going through. But because mm-hmm. I have been through that, I can sort of see that what I'm doing is not that difficult in the bigger scheme of things. And I think that really helps me.
You know, thank you again for sharing this. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about how you turned your passion into a career. I can't tell you how many people I know want to do that. So talk to us a little bit about the steps that you did to transform your love for cycling into a profession, and also the obstacles that you encountered along the way and how you overcame them.
Sure. So I took a little bit of leave from work. I decided to go and do a race in Europe. And at the time, I wasn't really happy with where I was at work. I was making good money. That was fine, but I wasn't happy. And it didn't seem healthy. I realized something was wrong, but I didn't really know what to do about it. And I went to Europe and I came and did this ultra race. It was a 10-day race. It started in Belgium and it finished in Turkey. And basically, you just had to ride between point A and B. And I set off into the night and I thought, wow, this is the first time I've really felt like I'm alive. Like, I was excited. I was, you know, experiencing things that I hadn't experienced before. And I had a lot of time to think. And I have to be honest, I had the encouragement from my parents when I made the decision, and that made things a lot easier. But when I finished that race, my dad met me in Turkey and he said, how was it? And I said, you know, it was amazing. I felt alive. And he said, well, why don't you make a career out of this? And I sort of laughed and I said, how am I going to make a career out of this? And he said, well, I think that if you're passionate about what you're doing, that you'll find a way to do it. And so, you know, like I said, he encouraged me to take that step. But when I went back to work, I handed him my notice and I said, look, I'm not going to work here anymore. I need to follow something that I'm passionate about. And they almost laughed at me as well. They said, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to try and become a professional cyclist. And I was in my mid-20s at the time, and I don't think anyone thought it was really possible, especially because I wasn't racing. And so to begin with, I thought, look, how am I going to make money? I'm going to try and approach different tourism boards, and I'm going to see if I can travel to the countries and have my travel expenses paid for in return for creating or writing articles, talking about my experience and showcasing the country. And I did a couple of these trips in Asia and they were quite successful. I got my expenses paid for and it was basically a stepping stone. I then sort of realized I could use that as a method for advertising. So I would go to these countries, I'd write these articles in magazines, so I could then approach some brands and you know, get some exposure for these different brands. And a long story short, it was a slow, gradual process, but I was doing something that I really cared about. And it didn't matter if I was up at 10 at night writing an email to someone, didn't matter if I was up at 3 in the morning getting ready to go ride. I was loving it. And I think I was so passionate about it that I was, you know, there was no way I wasn't going to make a career out of it. And, you know, it has been years in the making, but I'm at a point now where it's turned into a career and it's an amazing career. And I feel very privileged to do what I do. But I think the biggest thing is taking that step, taking that risk and just, you know, going for it.
That's great. Talk to us a little bit about specific strategies or mindset shifts you have found helpful in transferring the skills and mindset cultivated through sports to other areas of your life.
Sure. So I think, like, as a cyclist or as an athlete, we've become very good at setting these small goals and working towards achieving them. And I think this is a skill set that can be then used in normal life. So, you know, we often, for example, if I've got a 10-hour ride to do, I might break that down in my mind. I never look at it as 10-hour ride. I might look at it as three-hour rides plus a cool, you know, warm down. And it's, you know, breaking it into a manageable goal. If I then apply that to normal life, be it a, you know, like a financial goal that I'm working towards, trying to save money for a house, I never look at it as though it's a, you know, a $50,000 deposit that I'm saving. I'm looking at it as it's going to be, you know, 5 or 6 years saving a chunk each year. And every day I'm going to, you know, put a couple of dollars into a piggy bank. And I think there's ways of looking at things that, you know, as an athlete, we take for granted that we can, you know, set these goals and slowly work towards them. And I think, you know, there's lots of different examples of ways that we can then apply that to normal life. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, I write these things down, I look back at them, I create little videos around them, and I try and share the knowledge that I've taken from the sport to help others apply it to their lives. And I think, yeah, as athletes, as you know, Yuri's, I'm sure, had similar circumstances where he's learned things as an athlete that he then applies to his life at Goo or his life at home. And, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to move on to Yuri. But before we move on, I want to say that I'm so appreciative of our sponsor. I must take the time out to thank them. Please support our sponsor and tell them that you heard about them on Hillary Topper on Air. Special thanks to Boldfoot Socks, a family and veteran owned American sewn, American grown sock company. Now back to you. So, Yuri, let's switch gears a little bit here. As an elite athlete manager for Goo, you've been rethinking the traditional model of athlete brand sponsorships, focusing on the complete athlete. You know, those who also get involved with charitable causes. What inspired you to make this shift with Goo and Goo's charitable foundation and Goo Gives?
That's a great question. Well, I think some of the shift maybe paralleled my transition a little bit, for better or worse, from less elite athlete into a more complete athlete, somebody who's not solely just focused on performances or getting on podiums, but seeing what I can accomplish, much like what Jack does with his pedal strokes. What good can I do through creating events or creating rides that help benefit others? Because I found that when we do things for others, it's more rewarding and it impacts more folks. So I started rethinking our athlete roster probably 4 or 5 years ago. You know, back in the day, we were purely just focused on elite performers. You know, I had the honor of working with Marinda Carfrae, 3-time Ironman world champion. She's also an Australian. But I realized that I felt we could make more of an impact with some of our athletes who are maybe a little bit less elite. Not that Jack is not an elite athlete, but more complete, that are doing these things that will inspire other folks maybe to get out and do things. So The shift also sort of came about as we realigned sort of our charitable side of our company. We have a part of our company called Goo Gives, where we align ourselves with causes that align with our core values as a company. And we give a percentage of proceeds back to certain groups. Like, for example, this year we're working with an Indigenous organization called Rising Hearts. We did a custom flavor where part of the proceeds will go back to this group that is championing Indigenous runners, events, celebrations of place, right? Acknowledging those who came before us. And kind of sort of the overarching theme for this is doing well to do good. So somebody like Jack, who does well on the bike, right, performance wise, he's also doing a lot of good with his pedal strokes too. So that's sort of been in the back of my mind for a few years as I've looked at our athletes. I've tried to be more inclusive. I've tried to add more color to our roster as well over the past few years. And so it's been really fun to rethink what our athletes mean to us, how we can help them, how they can help us, because at the end of the day, it has to be a two-way street, in my opinion. Sponsorship used to be sort of just a one-way street where you would cut a check to an athlete and that was the last you would hear of them. So that's a little bit about how I have been trying to reimagine how we work with our elite athletes.
So talk to us a little bit about the criteria, like how do you consider these partnerships?
Yeah, so it's very subjective. There is no objective like metric or model or scales that I am using at all. That's the funny thing. You could probably ask Jack about this in his interactions with sponsors, is that there really is no like clear guideline. You have this many followers, or you've won this many races, so that equates to this amount of dollars. That's not how it really works. So this may sound, this may sound a little odd, but I go off of my gut, the vibe or the interaction I get working with athletes. Unfortunately, you know, the last 2 years, a lot of my interactions have been over Zoom, so I've never been able to meet some of these folks in person, but I will say I got to spend a week with Jack last week in Kansas, and I can 100% say that he's an amazing human being, and I'm glad that we decided to work with him. So it's a combination of things. It's looking at maybe their like creative side, their blog, if they have some sort of creativity side to them. Many of them are creators, right? Like Jack creating videos or written content. I don't really attach a lot of credence or value to social media metrics. Like if they have over 100,000 followers, that's nice, but I want good human beings at the end of the day. And oftentimes, and I may get, you know, in trouble for saying this, but oftentimes, you know, the most elite or the fastest athletes aren't always the greatest people out there, for better or worse. So I don't really have a really clear, like, path that I follow, but more so just trust my gut and do my homework and have meetings with folks and see how what they're doing as an athlete aligns with the storytelling we're trying to do or the good we're trying to do through our brand and our charitable side, which is called Goo Gives.
Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the new products that Goo has out there? We started to talk a little bit about that before the interview, but I'd love for our listeners to hear about what Goo has.
Well, we have a complete line of products, everything from, you know, hydration to recovery and everything in between. Folks know us primarily for our Goo gel, which was the original 30 years ago. We have a higher octane form of that called Roctane, which has more branched chain amino acids. So it'd be like putting regular gas in your gas tank versus putting high octane gas. So you have two choices there. We also have a liquid energy gel, which is a more watery version for those folks who don't like, as we were talking about earlier, Hillary, the consistency of our gel can be a turnoff for some folks. We have a chewable form of Goo, which is in our gummies, our chews. We also have Stroop waffles for those of you that maybe aren't into sciencey sports food. You can have a Stroop waffle. We have two types of hydration. We have a hydration tab, which is purely sodium and electrolytes, 10 calories, they effervesce in your bottle. And then we also have a high calorie, high caloric drink, which is sort of my go-to. I think it's in Jack's bottle for a lot of his big events. It's called Roctane Energy Drink, 250 calories per hour, some caffeinated, some not. We have recovery product, drink, and then we have some capsules. We have electrolyte capsules that have ginger in them, which help settle your stomach and aid digestion. We also have branched chain amino acid capsules, and we also have magnesium, which aids sleep and recovery. We're constantly working on new flavors. We're sort of known as like the 31 flavors, right? For better or worse, of gel companies out there. And as I mentioned earlier, we did a raspberry lemonade with Rising Hearts this year, and all the proceeds, well, not all the proceeds, a percentage of those proceeds will go back towards what that group is doing. So yeah, there's things in the R&D pipeline that I can't talk about, but yeah, it's exciting to be part of a brand that sort of provides a full suite of products that folks can pick and choose from to fit their nutritional needs.
Absolutely. That's really exciting. So it's been an absolute pleasure having both of you on my show. Before we wrap this up, are there any final messages that either one of you want to share with our listeners?
All right. I'm going to share one. I think one of the sort of mantras that I live by is that it's okay not to be okay. And I think it's an important one because we get so caught up with social media, seeing this perfect life and this, you know, the perfect things happening, that I think we often lose sight of the fact that, you know, there are downtimes in life, and that's also normal too. And so for anyone listening that's been through a tough time or is going through a tough time, just a reminder that that's okay too. And that you will get through that. You will get through the other side. And you know, this is the roller coaster of life.
Absolutely. That's a great message. Thank you.
I would like to just remind people that they have more in them than they think they do, because in my years of riding bikes and doing endurance sports, right, we're our own worst critics, right? We're really harsh on ourselves, and we often sell ourselves short on what we're capable of doing. And then you go out and actually do it, and you redraw that line of what you thought was possible. So I would just like to remind folks that continually to redraw that line of what you think is possible, because you will surprise yourself.
Absolutely. I love that. Thank you for sharing. And thank you both for being on the show. I also would like to thank our sponsor once more, Bold Foot Socks, a family and veteran owned American sewn, American grown sock company. For more information, visit boldfoot.com. And of course, I'd like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you want more information on this show or any other show, visit our website at hillarytopper.com, or you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Alexa, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we're out there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.